stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Welcome in San Diego. I'm Andrew Bowen, filling in for Jade Hindman. On today's show, California breaks new ground in the fight for reparations. But who will benefit and how? This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Last night, Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed several bills that were part of the statewide reparations effort. The vetoed bills were related to university admissions, home buying, and unjust property seizures. This comes days after Newsom signed Senate Bill 518 to establish a state bureau for descendants of American slavery. Joining me with the details is Katie Heisen. She covers racial justice and social equity for KPBS. And Katie, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So Newsom vetoed a series of bills last night. Prior to that, he had signed some of them. Before we get into the specifics of all of these bills, remind us how we got to this point.
It took a century and a half since emancipation for a state to take concrete steps towards reparations like this. But since California started the ball rolling, it's rolled pretty fast. It created a reparations task force in 2020. They issued their final report with more than 100 recommendations in 2023. Governor Newsom issued a formal apology for California's role in slavery and racism in 2024. And then just days ago, he signed into law a bill creating a Bureau of Descendants of American Slavery. And he also signed into law a bill funding universities to develop a system to confirm eligibility. But last night, he vetoed several other reparations-related bills.
So let's start with AB 7, one of these bills that was on his desk. This has to do with university admission. So explain what the goal is here.
So generally, the state constitution prohibits discriminating or giving preferential treatment to anyone based on race. This bill would have allowed California State University and the University of California to consider giving admissions preference to an applicant who is a descendant of an enslaved person.
And AB 57 was another one that the governor vetoed. That was related to first-time home buyers. So what would that bill have done?
The California Dream for All Fund helps first-time home buyers with down payment assistance. We saw those funds run out very fast after it was first launched, but there should be ongoing new funds coming in. AB 57 would have set aside 10% of those funds for certified descendants of formerly enslaved people.
And then two other bills, AB 62 and AB 742, were also vetoed by Newsom. He said that they would strain state resources. Tell me about those bills and what they would have done.
AB 62 would have established a claims process for people to seek restitution for property taken through racially motivated eminent domain. So, for example, the government took someone's private property to build a freeway through it, and they didn't fairly compensate the person at that time. And the reason they didn't fairly compensate them was because of their race. So that bill would have allowed that person to now make a claim for that fair compensation. AB 742 would have required the Department of Consumer Affairs, which licenses for hundreds of professions like doctors and cosmetologists, to expedite applications for descendants of formerly enslaved people.
And So some of these bills, you know, actually putting money behind the reparations effort was what made them, you know, not quite cross the finish line. What are reparations advocates, or how are they responding to these series of vetoes?
So that reparations task force, the one that issued the report in 2023 with all of the recommendations of what California needed to do to repair the harm caused by its part in slavery and racism, this morning they issued a statement that they're profoundly disappointed by the vetoes of these bills. They say, you know, creating the bureau and the eligibility system is a meaningful step, but they called the governor's support selective and said it undermines the vision of comprehensive reparations that began with the task force. They say Black Californians have waited generations for structural change, not what they call partial progress. And they ended their statement with this quote, "At this stage, anything less than full commitment feels like a retreat from the promise of truth, reconciliation, and justice."
So just a few days ago, Governor Newsom was applauded by these advocates for signing SB 518. This bill, or now law, establishes a bureau for descendants of American slavery. What will that bureau actually do?
The bureau is meant to be a home base that will run whatever reparations programs the state does pass.
And what are the next steps to make that bureau actually function as an agency?
The first step is for the governor to select a director. I'm told that search process could take up to a year, and then the director would build out the bureau from there. But the bureau also needs the governor and the legislature to allocate it funding before it can actually operate. And I'm told that the university system has 3 years to develop that system for determining who qualifies. So, you know, it won't be overnight.
And you spoke to State Senator Akilah Weber Pearson, who authored that bill, SB 518. What did she tell you about its significance?
Before all these vetoes, I asked her to put into words the significance of this bill becoming law and the creation of the bureau. And here's what she said.
It's very difficult for me to put into words. It is a feeling. It is a struggle. It is a journey that those who are descendants of American slavery have been fighting for ever since emancipation. The issue of reparations, the issue of reparative justice has been something that our ancestors have fought for generations and generations. And so to see this finally start to happen, the foundation with the agency, is something absolutely incredible.
She talks about ancestors fighting for this for generations, but it's also a very immediate generational fight for her because her mother, who's now Secretary of State, Shirley Weber, was actually the one who authored the bill creating the reparations task force.
A bit of family legacy there. Before these bills got to Newsom's desk, you spoke to Cheryl Grills, who was a member of the state's reparations task force. She said the bills represent a first step and that the public's trust was on the line. What did she mean by that?
We were discussing what was at stake if the governor were to veto this package of reparation bills. And here's what she said at that time.
It is re-traumatizing, and it has it would smack of dishonesty, right? Because on one hand, you're saying, yes, something happened, and we need to understand it to its fullest extent, and then we need to address it. And so you say that on one hand, and so then when we point out everything and then nothing is done, how can I trust you? How can I trust government?
I think that same sentiment applies now to both the vetoes and what the bureau actually does once it's created. It's one thing to develop systems, but I think Californians, especially those who might qualify for reparations, will be waiting to see whether this bureau meaningfully affects their lives.
Now, last year, there were a couple of bills that failed to pass the state legislature, and Grill said that that had to do with disagreement over which Black Americans should be eligible for reparations. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, many people, including Grills herself, took issue with the genealogy requirement in a lot of these bills, requiring people to establish that they're a descendant of an enslaved person of African descent in order to receive the benefits. And the big argument was that post-slavery racism and discrimination has harmed and continues to harm all Black Americans. When a police officer pulls someone over, or when someone's considering whether or not to grant someone a loan, they're not asking about their genealogy or if they're from the Caribbean rather than the continent of Africa, right? They're only seeing the color of their skin. And that contention hasn't gone away. But ultimately, Grills says the bill's passed this year because of a wave of community support that wasn't there last year. And centering programs on genealogy rather than race might protect them from some of the legal attacks on race-based programs that we're seeing unfold across the country.
You mentioned community support helping carry some of these bills to the finish line. What does that community support look like? And tell me about how it's been changing or making itself known to us.
She says at last count, more than 8,000 letters were sent to the governor's office in support, and that's across racial lines. And she says about a third of those were from white Californians, almost a fifth from Asian Californians. And so that support from allies really helped push these bills into law this year.
What does the governor's decision about these bills signal to the public about our government's commitment to reparations?
The signing of the bills creating the bureau and the eligibility system gave a lot of hope to reparations advocates, but I think the vetoes really undercut that. If you create the framework for repair but veto the specific actions of repair, that's like building a hospital and hiring the doctors and not opening the doors to patients.
Well, I've been speaking with KPBS racial justice and social equity reporter Katie Heisen. Katie, thank you for sharing your reporting on this.
Thanks for having me.
Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.